From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2008 when Rochester launched its own chapter of Honor Flight. Honor Flight is an organization that flies veterans to Washington, D.C. free of charge. In D.C., the veterans visit the memorial of the war in which they served. And since 2008, Rochester Honor Flight has flown hundreds of veterans to spend these emotional weekends. When they return home, they are greeted with cheering crowds at the airport. This hour, we meet some of the veterans who've taken these missions, and they'll explain how Honor Flight has impacted their lives. We thought it a fitting conversation to have on Memorial Day. Let me go ahead and introduce our guests for the hour as we discuss Honor Flight. Peter Glennon is a retired U.S. Air Force major, the youngster of this group, and the man who is not only the co-founder of Honor Flight Rochester, but someone who is going to be telling us about the mission going forward of Honor Flight and how it has evolved. So, Peter, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
Going around the table, First Class Petty Officer Bill Diesel is here, who served in the U.S. Navy in the Korean War. Bill, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Private First Class George Haynes is here, an Army Scout in the Pacific in World War II. George, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Corporal John Woods is here from the Army Air Corps in World War II. Corporal Woods, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Well, it is important to start by talking about what Honor Flight is and how it has evolved, because some of our listeners might have seen some of the news out of Buffalo that their chapter back in January, the Buffalo News reported that they were disbanding, at least for now. We'll see what happens there. I know there are chapters around the country. And Peter, Honor Flight goes back to, well, you were mentioning it, the genesis kind of goes back to 2004. Why don't you tell me about that?
Sure. Evan, in 2004, the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. was dedicated to the public. And clearly that had been a long time since the end of World War II, and many of the World War II veterans around the country were aging at that time. So the thought was going around the country, how and when will these World War II veterans make it to D.C. to see their national memorial? There's a fellow in Ohio named Earl Morse, who's an Air Force Reserve physician and assistant, and he was encouraging these World War II veterans to make the trip from Ohio to Washington to see their memorial. Understandably, some of these veterans said that they wouldn't have the time or the ability to make it down. So Earl had a private pilot's license and had some friends in the flying community, and he started to take them on one-day trips down to see their memorial. And that was the genesis of Honor Flight.
And Rochester's chapter officially established in 2008?
That's correct. It was early 2008. We were one of the earlier ones. I think there may have been 25 or 30 in existence at the time. There was a core group of us, about seven of us, who got together and said, let's do this here in Rochester. We met at a few coffee shops and mapped out a plan and sought to recruit some veterans and raise a couple dollars. And we were able to launch our first mission. October of 2008, we flew 8 veterans.
And here you are now in 2016, continuing to run how many flights a year now, Peter?
Right. Our operations plan is 6 missions per year. There have been 2 years when we flew 7, when we had a backlog of World War II and Korean veterans who we wanted to take down. We've now flown 47 missions and a total of 2,231 veterans.
Remarkable. And for those who see those news headlines from Buffalo, maybe other chapters around the country have served veterans, flown these flights, but are disbanding. Peter mentioned before the program began, and I think this is important. To some degree, that's not a surprise because these chapters were founded for a purpose, and it's, they may feel like those missions have been carried out to some degree. Why don't you tell me about that, Peter?
That's correct. The purpose of Honor Flight originally was to fly the World War II veterans to D.C. to visit their memorial. So many communities around the country, once they've flown all of the World War II veterans from their community, they have called it mission accomplished, success, and they have closed down. Here in Rochester and in a few other communities across the country, we've had such a tremendous support from the community that we decided to continue our mission flying the Korean War veterans. Korean War, first of all, let's remember the folks who served during that time are essentially the siblings of those from World War II. There was still the occupation forces in Germany in that time and in Japan, and it is known as the Forgotten War. But we here in the greater Rochester community wanted to let these men and women know that we have not forgotten about them. We have not forgotten about their service to our country, and we have not forgotten about their service to our community upon the time they return. They're also a part of the greatest generation.
And so do you have a sense for how many more years you will do this or what the need may be going forward?
Well, the need, I think, will always be there as long as we have brave men and women who are willing to serve their country and their community. And what we've said in Honor Flight Organization is that we'll continue to do this for so long as the community supports us. And I'll tell you, Evan, there's no sign of it waning.
Well, and on the subject of community support, you may, listeners, you may have an assumption that this is government-funded, government-run, et cetera. It is not. $500 sponsors a veteran. Donations, of course, of all sizes are welcome, and it's easy to contact them. You can do it via email, volunteerhonorflightrock, R-O-C, volunteerhonorflightrock@gmail.com. How else can they contact you, Peter?
Well, of course, they can find our website, honorflightrochester.org, and we have our phone number listed there. And there's other ways. You can always feel free to reach out and speak with me. I'm always happy to speak with anybody. And Evan, you make the comment of funding. We're not government funded. A lot of people are also surprised to learn that less than 10% of our donations every year are from corporations. This is a true grassroots organization, fundraising effort from everybody from the west side to the east side down to the southern tier.
We're familiar with donations of all sizes here at WXXI, and so are you. I mean, sometimes people are just chipping in little bits here and there, knowing that every little bit goes toward an individual mission. But that $500, for example, that sponsors a veteran, how long, you know, give me a sense for those flights, those missions, and what it does entail.
Well, for the full trip, we covered, the veterans are not allowed to contribute a penny. So this is fully funded by our contributions. The veterans aren't allowed to contribute at all. So we receive the community donations, and for that, we fly our veterans down to Washington, D.C. on a Saturday morning. We take three luxury motor coaches into D.C. because we fly into BWI in Baltimore. We take the buses into D.C. We tour all of the memorials, Arlington Cemetery. And then when we're done with those, we return to the Baltimore area where we've rented out a couple floors at a Hilton, and we have a nice banquet dinner, anything these gentlemen and ladies would like to eat and drink. we have a little celebration there, and we get some stories going. We put them to bed. We get them up in the morning. We have a huge breakfast spread. Then we fly them back here to Rochester, and that's all covered in the contributions.
Private First Class Haynes was remarking about at least the food. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're going to talk about your individual experiences, but that seemed like an endorsement at least. Was it, George?
Yeah. The whole thing is amazing from start to end. From the time the vets get up to the airport Saturday morning, everything is amazing. And when they come back Sunday, those who had doubts about going just talk about it for our days and days later. There's Bill, one of the later ones. at this flight, the last flight I went down, there was a gentleman I talked to last year, and he was not going to go. He definitely had no part of it. He went on the last flight, and Sunday you couldn't shut him up. He just constantly went.
George, can you explain, though, why wouldn't he have wanted to go?
He sat behind the desk. He wasn't in combat. He come up with more excuses than Carter's got pills. But when he finally went down now, he's tickled pink that he went. And he, in turn, will talk to other vets. That's what we hope, that it keeps working. But he just didn't figure his job was important enough.
Isn't that the story of just about every veteran you meet? They're so humble. You know, it is very difficult to get them to take credit for the work and the sacrifice.
We try to convince them that your job was important because you relieved somebody else. So every job that was being done was important. And I don't know who can completely finished him off to come up, but Sunday he was happy.
This Memorial Day, we're talking about Honor Flight Rochester, and you're hearing from George Haynes, who was an Army scout in the Pacific in World War II. You were on, was it one of the earlier Honor Flights? When did you go?
I went on Mission 30.
Mission 30, okay.
I had to take care of my wife 24/7 for years, mm-hmm. And as soon as she passed, I put in for it, and I went in September of 13.
Okay, so and what number mission are we on, Peter?
Mission 48 will launch on June 18 and 19.
And you are serving kind of first come, first serve, is that correct?
Well, it's the date the application is received. World War II veterans move to the top of the line. Korean veterans and any veteran with a major illness will move up.
Okay, got it. So George, you served, you went on Mission 30, and did you go down with any expectation? Did they have to twist your arm? You said, obviously, they didn't because...
No, I was...
You wanted to do it.
I had heard about it years before, but because I had to take care of my wife,
yep.
So I couldn't. But I'm so happy that I went.
Tell me about your experience with it.
I had no idea what was going to happen, but it was one thing after another. And fortunately, I took two handkerchiefs because I cried like a baby many times. It's just, they do so much for you. Everything is like clockwork. And the flight down, there's surprises. When you get down there, there's a surprise. You have the Patriot Guard? Even down at Washington, they give you a motorcycle escort right into the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and all the rest of them. Everything is just so amazing. And yet, they have it all planned out. To them, those who are down there in Washington to go with the nurses and everything, it's nothing. It's a daily thing for them.
Sure.
And they love it just as much as we. And when I came back, I decided I was going to work with them, get into it. And I kind of forced myself into it. And now I'm tickled pink.
George, you said you didn't know what to expect going down, though you wanted to do it. But it was an emotional trip. Were you surprised at how emotional it was for you?
Yeah.
You were?
Yep.
How come?
I don't know. I guess I just figured it was going to be a flight down. You'd see it and you'd come back again. But it was just the room, the food, the friendship. And I had an experience in the service that I'd kept inside of me for all these years. And I was talking to one of the other vets on the same flight, and he's had the same thing happen to him. He was in Europe, in Belgium. And I got it out. I let it out. And now it's, I got interviewed, and now it's in the Library of Congress.
Wow. So you felt that connection, you know, that ability to take something that was inside of you that you dealt with from your own service and felt some solidarity?
Yeah.
You felt that way?
I was good to get it out. It was a big load off of my shoulders. Mm-hmm. I was so glad now I can talk about it, and I still can now.
Well, speaking of humility, before the hour began, I was asking about the ranks of the gentleman at the table, and George jumped in and said, I was the lowest. It's very self-deprecating. PFC Haynes here. But can you tell us about your service? You began to tell me about it before we started having this conversation, but can you tell us about your service?
Well, I enlisted. I wasn't a draftee, and I had about eight months training, and then we went overseas through the Panama Canal, which was beautiful. Here you've seen something gorgeous, and you may not ever come home. But I went over there, landed in New Guinea, and then they took us to an island, Goodenough Island, which trained us for jungle. And then I made the landing on Hollandia, New Guinea, Coral Islands, Leyte in the Philippines, and Mindoro, Mindanao.
And what did your service entail when you were there?
Good Lord watched over me. I talked to him nightly. And I was lucky. That's all I can say, being a first scout. I was just lucky to go through it. I lost a patrol once behind me, but they were too far behind. But I was just lucky. I can't say anything more than that.
Well, George, I would remind you that some of our listeners are intimately familiar with what service entails and what individual ranks do. But some may not know in a whole lot of detail what an Army Scout does. And you say you were lucky. Why?
Because we were always being fired at. You had the first scout always kept his eyes forward. The second scout always looked above because most of the Japanese would be in the trees as snipers. They didn't use too much artillery because it would explode in the trees. So everything was on the ground. And you just had to be sharp at every minute. Any kind of if it was quiet in the jungle or something wrong, the birds aren't squealing, and there's no noise at all, then there's something wrong. So you walk very cautiously and slowly. You're not in a hurry.
George, do you still remember some of the feelings that you had knowing that you were being fired upon? I mean, again, I go back to the fact that most of our listeners hearing your voice right now have never been shot at, have never been in that position that you were in. Do you still, all these years later, remember what that felt like?
Yes, a number of times. It's scary. You get down to the ground and you kiss the ground. you fall unconsciously. You know there's something wrong. You hit the ground. Get behind something to protect you and then observe. I lost a helmet once and I never wore a helmet thereafter. First of all, because if it got scratched, the sun would sparkle off from it and you could be seen. So I always wore a hat. And it was just you were always conscious. Fortunately, I was good at listening and watching, and you were always conscious the enemy was out there. Fortunately, our company commander would never send you on a patrol 2 days in a row. They had enough in the company to, you got rode a day. You usually went out every other day, but not every day. You had 1 day of rest.
I imagine the training must have been tremendous. For you to be in that high-pressure situation, you have to rely on training to a large degree, right?
I'm surprised how little we had. Because
really?
Basic training was down in Georgia. And 8 months later, I was on a ship going out of Chalmers Slip, Louisiana.
Wow.
8 months is an awful lot when you're going in to be shot at. And I had never shot a submachine, Thompson. And I just had an M1 rifle.
Did you get pretty good?
Yeah. I always had plenty of ammunition. Always.
And so, George, when you described the honor flight and being on that journey and finally being able to let some of this off, let some of this out, and now you say you're still able to talk about it. That kind of unlocked that for you?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So for years, did you just not talk about it?
I never even told my wife. She never knew anything about it. There was just something I felt I had to keep inside of me, and I tried not even to think about it. It was awful what I had seen.
And so it was, I guess, kind of your emotional reaction to kind of protect your own self, not to think about it, not to talk about it?
I don't know why I did it. I just couldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried not to ever see it in my mind. There was a couple of different incidences of how the Japanese, what they had done.
So when we talk about honor flight, and we've heard so many stories. Again, Peter, how many veterans in Rochester have you served over the years now?
2,231.
You know, so many different stories. Obviously, every person has a different perspective. We've heard veterans, and I'll ask the other gentleman at the table in a minute about their experiences. We've heard veterans say, I didn't know that the public cared and really celebrated us this much. I didn't know that we were valued this much. And then you hear someone like George telling his experience about not just how wonderfully organized and how valuable it was to have that kind of excellent planning and preparation, but to be able to commiserate and feel solidarity among other veterans. And finally, after all these decades, talk about what happened. That's an amazing thing, Peter. I mean, every person probably has a different story, but that is an amazing thing to hear what George is saying.
Absolutely, Evan. And that's one of the reasons I'll point out that Honor Flight Rochester is unique among the hubs in that we do the overnight. We're the first ones to do an overnight and still the only ones east of Kansas. And we do that not because we were originally thinking everybody would be tired, but what we realized was by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, after we've toured all these memorials, what George just described, we've noticed that we've just brought together Evan peers, not children, not teachers or academics. These are peers. These are individuals who went through the same thing, experienced those same emotions, and now they're talking, they're speaking. And why shut that off and bring them home? Let's go back and have dinner and get the stories going.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, George, before I turn to your colleagues here, I just want to ask you now. After you spent all those decades having a hard time confronting what you saw, and you say you saw awful things, right now in this country there's a discussion about PTSD, stress, anxiety among service members. We know the suicide rate is alarmingly high. Do you understand what service members who are currently serving and currently coming home are going through, and do you feel for them? Are you concerned about them?
Yes, very much so. Yes. I had a friend down the street, and he had that problem. He was over in Vietnam, and He's no longer with us, but yeah, they go through a lot. They see a lot.
They certainly do. Let me turn to First Class Petty Officer Bill Diesel, served in the U.S. Navy in the Korean War. And Bill, you heard Peter say earlier that one of the reasons they wanted to expand the mission of Honor Flight is to make sure Korean War veterans didn't feel forgotten. To some degree, that is kind of a forgotten war. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, sure, especially the guys that are over there now and, you know, in the... they're doing the same thing as George did. Guys are shooting at them, and you know, it's just I did think you got to keep going with these people. You got to support the military.
And so you went on Honor Flight. When was yours?
I think it was 45. It was last September.
Last September, so
yeah, last September, and a fella by the name of Chapman, who was in the Honor Flight previous, I met him in a breakfast one time, and he saw my hat, and he gave me a card and recommended that I call and make an appointment to try to get on the Honor Flight, which I did, and I'm best thing I ever did.
You heard George say he didn't know what to expect, even though he was eager to do it. Did you have any expectations on what the trip would be like?
I had heard about how good it was, and I knew about pretty much what they were. But, I mean, it's nothing like being there yourself. It's just unbelievable. Bob Dole was there at the Korean Memorial. We talked to him, and he was funny. I asked him why he's not getting in this race for the Republicans. He said, I'm too old for that.
Well, how many veterans were with you? Do you roughly know?
I believe it was around 48.
Okay. It's pretty big. Is that common, by the way, Peter? Is that so?
Our typical mission is about 50 to 55, right?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that's a lot. So describe it a little bit more then, Bill, what you saw and what you experienced.
Well, it was, you know, really great to go and see these guys. I met a guy that I went to high school with, and I saw him from a distance. I said, hey, you, I know you, and he remembered me. And we got together after he came back and had breakfast together.
That's great.
But the Korean memorial is really something. And another thing, I met a guy at the... Vietnam Memorial, and he was holding his hand on the memorial, crying his eyes out. And I went over and hugged him, and I said, some of your buddies there, huh? He said, yeah. I said, well, you're here, and, you know, you've done your job. I almost cried myself when I saw him.
So, yeah, I certainly can't imagine, but I think it probably was some comfort for him to...
Yeah, I guess so. I know he probably, poor guy, I just felt like staying with him right there, but he was just crying his eyes out, and I said, get it out, buddy, just let it out.
Can you tell us a little bit about your service in the Navy for the Korean War, Bill?
My service was, I went to Great Lakes for my training, and then I went to Airman School in Norman, Oklahoma. Then I went to... Lake Rush, New Jersey, where the blimps are for the orographers training. It's a weatherman thing. And then they assigned me to Norfolk, Virginia, where they were doing a secret weather investigation. Obviously, it was about some people that might not like us very much, and they had to keep your mouth shut about that. I was with them for 2 years, and I went with Commander Second Fleet, who covers the North Atlantic, and we went on the Wisconsin, and we also went on the, it was a guided missile cruiser, Northampton was. And we went on that. The admiral had to go to sea once a year to get his sea pay, so we had to go with him. But I mean, my job too. Sometimes I thought about it. I never saw any combat. I never had any danger. And I thought, you know, I'm not really a sissy. I did what they told me. I must have been of some value to them. And I was served the 4 years there, and I was in 4 years of reserve after that. I had to, you know, stay in it in case they needed anybody, they could call me up. So, but I don't feel too bad about not, you know, I look at other guys, they're all heroes. I didn't have any big problem. I got to tell you a story about when we came back on from the honor flight. You came at the airport, and then, of course, people were cheering us on and on and on. And I looked at this one guy sitting in the chair over there, and I looked at him, and I said, I know that guy. I went over and said to him, I said, I know you. I know where you lived when I was a kid 12 years old and you went to war. And your name is Adam DeSantis. And he said, you remember that? I said, yeah, that's 70 years ago. I couldn't remember your name, but I remember your face, and I know you were a nice kid. Well, happened. He told me the story about, and he was at the Battle of the Bulge, and he said, it was so cold there. I'm with him now. I go to every, when they come back from the flights, we both go together and cheer all the guys coming back and the girls. But he was telling me when at the Battle of the Bulge, it was so cold, he used to get under the trucks and hug the mufflers on the truck to keep warm.
Wow.
Now he's 93.
Wow.
10 years older than me.
Well, Bill, this is a good time to talk about those ceremonies coming home, because I've been there at the airport. I've seen what that's like. It is a beautiful scene.
I go to every one of them now.
Isn't it great?
And my daughter signed up, too, because she went with me. She signed up for help, and I just sent my papers in a couple weeks ago.
All right, so Peter, let
if
me...
If they need help, you know, they got so much help, maybe they don't need me right away, but I'm there when they call.
We always need you, Bill.
I'm more than glad. I'm just thrilled when I go put my shirt on and go there and my hat and take my camera and take all their pictures when they come back, and it's just I relive my trip over and over again when they come back.
Well, let me ask Peter Glennon, the co-founder and chairman of Honor Flight Rochester, if our listeners want to contribute in different ways. We've talked about the financial contributions that fuel Honor Flight Rochester, and if you missed it earlier, it's not a government-funded organization. They rely on private contributions, and you can check out more at honorflightrochester.org. But there are other things that people can do. And first of all, just being there to celebrate them home is one way. Tell me about that and what else is sort of out there as a possibility to help out.
Sure. Evan, one thing we like to say is not everybody can be a hero. Some of us have to stand on the curb and applaud as the heroes march by. We have been blessed in Honor Flight Rochester to have nearly 300 active volunteers. People are with us for a short amount of time, long amount of times. People can come and go because there's always so much for us to do. We, at any welcome home, we have on average 125 volunteers there. We have people standing directing human traffic. As you know, we do the parade through the airport. We make sure that every veteran's cared for and addressed, ensure that everybody's feeling well. We have people who ensure that our parade route within the airport is open for our veterans. And that's really, I've seen from our volunteers, many of them are happy to stand in that one spot and just keep pointing veterans and family members in the direction they need to go. That's their contribution. And as they're doing it, they're thinking of a loved one, a father, a mother, an uncle, a grandfather. That's how they're giving back. Because, you know, the one question I've received the most from these veterans, World War II and Korean, when they say, why do you want to do this for us? Why do you want to take us and not charge us? There's no such thing as a free lunch. The only honest answer is, you're right, we're getting something out of it. We get the opportunity to express our gratitude, which is fills up in each and every one of us. And every one of our volunteers has that same reaction. The tears you've heard these gentlemen share on the trip, that's what our volunteers do each and every time. But our volunteers, we have a group of nurses and doctors who help screen applications to let us know the conditions of the veterans who'd like to fly. And we pretty much take everyone, just so you know. There's a very, very low rejection rate. We have volunteers who pack knapsacks and bags that our veterans receive on Saturday morning and they fly with us. We have veterans who are there about 125 on Saturday mornings to help everybody get through security, to serve them breakfast, to get them off the ground. And, of course, we have the ones at the Welcome Home. So anybody can go to our website and submit their email, and please just start showing up. You have to be a part of it, and wherever you can help, we'd appreciate to have it.
Let me turn to Corporal John Woods, who was with the Army Air Corps in World War II. And Corporal Woods, your honor flight trip was when?
I can't remember what it was, the early one, but
it
was, yeah.
And how did you sort of learn about it and get involved with it?
Well, you know, I left high school when I was 17 and joined the Air Force. I was an air cadet. And it was an air cadet system, and halfway through my training, when World War in Europe ended, and when that ended, they stopped the trainings of, didn't need any more pilots, and they gave us an option of honorable discharge, or you could stay in if you want. Of course, I stayed in, and because I was connected with the Air Force, that I got a job in the 20th Air Force and was shipped overseas to Guam. And, I saw the B-29s and I was a mechanic there. But when it was time to come home, you know, we came home one at a time. It was a numbering system. And somehow when your numbers came up, you were shipped home. You didn't come home as a whole group. And there were three of us, two of my buddies, myself, got picked from our group and came home. And we were in our fatigues with when we landed in San Francisco. We had no insignias on it, nothing. It was just plain. And we looked at these other GIs that were just coming in with Eisenhower jackets and so forth, which we never saw. So we kind of got on the end of a line of a new cadets coming in and picked up a uniform and got straightened out and so forth. But, you know, that was a part that, you know, when you think about the honor flight, you know, there was nothing when we came home. Nobody recognized us. You wound up at Fort Dix, and you got your honorable discharge and a ticket home, and that was it. But when I went on the honor flight, the thing that was so amazing to me was, you know, not only the trip of seeing the World War II memorial and everything there, but also coming home, when you came home, and that reception that was there, because no one greeted us when we came home from war. It was just utterly amazing. It brought tears to my eyes. And I said at that time, this is the end of the war. To me, this is the end. The war is over now. Because they had an experience of people recognize us, recognizing the fact that what we did, and we were home alone. And after that, I got a hold of George here, and I've been a volunteer with Honor Flight ever since, and I'm going to continue to do it. We go out and we raise money at carnivals and just about everything else you can think of. And I don't know how much money we've raised, George, but I think we've raised an awful lot. And we're going to keep doing it, too. Honor Flight is the greatest thing. It really was a great experience.
John, is it exciting for you to be part of that welcome home ceremony now? Because you knew, you experienced what it meant?
Yes, very much so. To be in that, you know, we're there every time they come back. And to greet these soldiers as they come in, and, you know, they went through the same thing that we did. Nobody recognized them before. And now they're recognized for the first time, and there's all these people here that show up to, cheer them on. And it's just a wonderful experience. And George and I, of course, are involved in it, and we greet them all and help them, and we help set up the operation as we were talking about before. It's a great experience.
Let's take our only break of the hour now on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's special programming for this Memorial Day. You'll hear a new perspective on the often overlooked story of the Marines who fought in the brutal Pacific campaign of World War II. It's called Independent Minds, At War in the Pacific. That's coming up next hour. This Memorial Day, we're talking about Honor Flight Rochester, honorflightrochester.org for more information. And if you missed the explanation earlier and somehow 8 years later after it was founded, you're still not totally familiar with it. Peter, just one more sort of a recap on what Honor Flight is and how it operates for our listeners just joining us.
Sure. Honor Flight Rochester is the opportunity for the community to express its gratitude to all of the veterans of World War II and Korea. And in fact, Evan, we're accepting applications up through 1964 right now, going into the Cold War. This is our opportunity to say thank you to these men and women for serving our country and for coming back and serving in our communities, building our towns and schools, and providing to us all the benefits we have.
And you go to?
And we take them on a Saturday morning down to Washington, D.C. to tour all of their memorials and to bond together. And we bring them back after some fun times back to Rochester on a Sunday afternoon.
Okay. And again, you're coming up on a mission close to 50. What number mission you're on, Peter?
We just flew 47, 48 okay. Flies in June.
And the mission season for you is kind of the warm weather months, right? April through October or so?
Right. We'll do April through June, and then we'll do September and October. July and August seem to be a little hot and sticky down there.
You know, one of the things, we have an aide that goes with us when we travel. And I had my daughter as my aide. And the bonding that between my daughter and myself was so great after that, because she never knew what I did. And she went down with me, and all of the veterans have wheelchairs, whether we need them or not. And I didn't need it. I was walking, except for the small area where we have to go up towards the Vietnam Memorial. And I decided, I think maybe I'll use the wheelchair right here.
But I want to explore what John is talking about here, because to me this is important. In that so many of our veterans feel like, for various reasons, even their closest loved ones don't really understand their experience. You know, George was talking about how for years he didn't tell his wife about what he went through. And John, you feel like, you know, this was the trip, this honor flight trip, that allowed you to connect with your own daughter to
right.
understand it. But before that, did you choose not to talk much about it? Do you feel like family sometimes don't ask, you know, why?
The subject just doesn't come up, other than the fact that, you know you were in World War II, but they never ask anything about it.
Do you want them to ask?
Not particularly. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about, again, my daughter going to that, she decided that she wanted to go to nursing school, and she just graduated yesterday, and she's going to volunteer with Honor Flight to fly on the flights, because all of our flights have at least one or two nurses on.
That's beautiful. That's great. And even though you say you generally don't want them to ask, should we be concerned that family members have spent decades just, as you say, knowing, well, you know, my uncle, my dad, my cousin, so-and-so served in World War II, served in the Navy, served in the Vietnam War, but don't really know the details. Shouldn't we know a little more?
I don't think it's really necessary.
Hmm.
As George experienced like he's went through, he's reluctant to talk about it. He's seen some things that are really hard to talk about. We can talk generally about the fact that, yeah, we were, with General LeMay, and we saw, 250 flights of B-29s taking off for Japan. But and I know Tinian was where Lona Gay was in the Marshall Islands where we were, and we knew that was there. And but you know, other than that, we don't talk much about it.
Yeah, I mean, my father was an MP at Vietnam. I don't ever recall him volunteering stories. Now, if we ask, he'll talk, but I just don't recall, you know, that being kind of. Do you want to go ahead, George?
You don't want to bring him up. I don't want to bring it up in my mind again. What I saw, I've told now, and it's out. Forget it. That's what went on in my mind for years. I didn't want to remember it, visualize it.
Sure. And that this is where I think, you know, some family members might not ask because they are sensitive to that they don't want to put you in the frame of mind to make you sort of relive and confront those things. But George, for you, do you agree with John that generally you don't feel like family should be probing, asking?
I didn't want to bring it up and remember it myself.
Yeah.
And if I tell somebody about it, then I was going to bring it back in my mind, which I didn't want it to happen. I'd seen it and forget it. It was that bad.
We have more fun, George and I, volunteering.
He wants to be active.
But you see, Evan, I think that's what we're talking about. This group, these folks, they served and they're happier volunteering. They just want to keep giving back to the community.
Yeah, but I think, Peter, you know, I think as someone who I have not served in the military, so I don't have a full understanding that, you know, certainly there's a brother and sisterhood within the military that you can't have unless you have served. And that's not to say it's intentionally exclusionary. It's just like anything else. If you haven't done it, it's hard to understand it. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to, you know, kind of explore is, should we be asking more? Should we be asking mom and dad and grandparents and family members? And it's an interesting answer I'm hearing from them, which is that you should respect and honor, but there are times where it's hard to kind of mine that territory. How do you feel about that, Peter?
Well, my personal view and my experience with veterans from all the periods is it's a personal issue.
Yeah.
I do think that the stories should be told. Freedom is not free, as these gentlemen know. It's always one generation away from being lost, and we always need to have men and women willing to stand up for the values of our community and our country. So people should know what that really means and what's entailed by that. But at the same time, I think what you'll hear from a lot of veterans is they just did their job, and that's why it's personal.
Yeah, and maybe, George, there's a difference between someone who may ask you, what's the worst that you saw? That's a very specific, tough question. Between that and someone saying, you served our country. Your generation sacrificed in a tremendous way. And I respect that. And to the extent that you want to share, I want to know more about it. I'm going to sit down. I want to listen. Mm-hmm. That's different, right? I mean, that's a different kind of a question. And that allows you to kind of decide where you want to go with it, yeah?
That's not really what I don't, you know, the thing that when people come up to us when they see our hats and so forth and say, thank you for serving, that's all we want to hear.
Okay.
And I do the same thing. When I see another veteran and I go up to them and I say, thank you for your service. And that kind of fills our heart when that happens. And it in both giving and saying that to another veteran, and a stranger coming up to me and saying, thank you for your service. And that's all we want.
Those two words, thank you. They mean a lot.
Well, thank you, George. Thank you, John. Thank you, Bill. I'm not quite done. I want to get Bill Diesel to jump into this part, too. Yeah, how do you feel about this?
I was just about ready to say a point of interest, so I would like to say something here.
Sure.
I find myself reading books because of the fact that I would never saw any combat. I was never in any danger sitting in Norfolk doing what they told me to do in the Naval Air Station at Norfolk. But I never saw any combat. And so I find myself reading books like Battle of the Bulge, Patton, D-Day, and, of course, all the stuff that went on in the Pacific there. I have to read this stuff to see what some of these poor guys went through, and the thousands of guys at a time get killed. Oh, just, you know, I just can't imagine what they went through, and I just have a better appreciation of these old guys here. That
he's calling you the old guys.
Yeah, that's all right. They don't mind it. They're 10 years older than I am, and I think the world of them. And I think they're the real heroes. The real heroes are, of course, buried, but they went through some. They were lucky to live, but...
Well, like we say whenever we're trying to convince somebody to go on the honor flight, we don't care if you sat behind a desk. You did a job, and somebody else had to be relieved to go and do another job. So we don't care where you you serve. That's the main thing. That's all we care about.
That's an important point. It's a large organization, the military. There's different roles and different jobs, and nobody gets to pick which job they're taking. They're told which job to do, and each and every job is very important for the whole.
Well, before we're done here, I think it's also important to point out that Honor Flight is not a political organization, never has been. That's not what it's about. So I want to ask particularly John and George a question, but I don't frame it in a political context. I'm just curious as World War II veterans, because John mentioned, you know, you knew the Enola Gay was there, you were aware of it, et cetera. And now the president is going to Hiroshima, and he says not, you know, some of his critics have said it's an apology tour, the president saying he wants to continue to build good relationships with the Japanese people and that this is part of that process and it's difficult. I'm just curious, John, how do you feel about the president going to Hiroshima?
Well, I think it's fine for him to go there and see it. He's not going to apologize. He's going to see what it's in and build relations there. But, you know, we talk about the atomic bomb, our B-29s killed more people than the atomic bomb did. So we flew 250 B-29s on one flight over Japan and obliterated a city. So it's okay.
Okay. George?
We had a gentleman, a vet, on this last flight from the Enola Gay.
Angelo.
Yeah. He was on the last mission. I didn't get to meet him, but it was just, it kind of felt proud that we got one of the crew. But, the president's going to see a lot. I'm sure he's seen pictures of what happened, and now he's going to see what, I think you should go. It won't hurt. It won't hurt at all.
What good could come of it, George?
Understanding. They will understand them more, and maybe they'll understand us more.
I think, you know, in many ways that's an admirable sentiment, because when we talk to our veterans, our American veterans, especially on this Memorial Day, when you hear from Bill, George, and John, and you talk about what they have seen and been through. Honoring service also understands what war has entailed. And I don't think anybody at this table wants to see... I fear that war is part of the human condition. I would love to be wrong. Hmm. And we have to, as Peter says, be willing to make sure that freedom is preserved. I'd love to find a way to create a world where we don't have almost a perpetual state of war. But John, fair to say, as proud as you are of what we have accomplished, you don't want to see future generations have to deal with it.
No, you know, the wars after World War II, which incidentally is the only war we won, were mostly political wars, if you stop to think about it, and how they started it. And if the people who are in charge of our governments would realize that and stay away from political wars, you know, we'd be a lot less veterans. Hmm.
George, what do you think?
I go along with John. When you stop to think of it, they've all been political in some. Mm-hmm. And it'll still happen because you're not going to change it.
Bill Diesel, what do you think?
I'm pretty sick and tired of our president apologizing for what we have done, what we had to do. When they dropped the bombs, they saved millions of people's not in Japan. That would have been an awful mess. But I'm afraid he's going to do it. I think he's going to apologize just like he did about over in Europe.
You see, there's...
I just have a bad feeling. Our military is shrinking by the day. There's less, military people in. I don't know. I'm hoping for something better in the future.
Well, you see a wide range of views, but that's what American military is about. It is not monolithic. It's not meant to be a political organization. And what we have at this table are Americans who serve this country. I think Bill Diesel put it really poignantly when you said you don't feel like a hero, you didn't see combat. And then I watched Peter Glennon respond to that and react to that, the way you kind of shook your head, Peter. You're so used to hearing them say, well, I didn't see combat, I'm not, really a hero. Yeah, that's
so true.
Yeah, and that's just the default response. But Bill, a lot of people view you and service members as heroes. So I'll say it again, thank you.
Thank you,
Bill. Thank you, John. Thank you so much, George. And Peter Glennon, one more time, let our audience know how they can find Honor Flight and get involved.
Thank you, Evan. HonorFlightRochester.org is our website, HonorFlightRochester.org. There's an email contact there. There's a phone number there. We'd love to have anybody get involved, anybody who wants to express their gratitude to our veterans. We'd appreciate it. And if I could leave you with this parting thought, Evan, Memorial Day is certainly a day of remembrance for those who have served and paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. We do it one day a year. I encourage people on every Memorial Day to remember that they should be very, very proud of our community and our country going forward, and that they think of these men and women who are no longer with us every time they recite the Pledge of Allegiance, every time they sing our national anthem. And one other thought, in addition to being proud to be an American, as I know everyone here at this table is we have to realize that those men and women who did not return, for example, in Pittsburgh, there's 21 people who did not return since World War I. That left a hole in our community, in our society. And you just heard all these fellows talk about volunteering in our community. Those who didn't return didn't have the opportunity to give back. So I'd like to encourage everybody on Memorial Day to think of how they can give back to the community in honor of those who did not return from war.
Well said. And thank you to your service, and thank you for what Honor Flight has done and continues to do.
Appreciate that.
And it's Peter Glennon, the co-founder and chairman of Honor Flight Rochester. We hope that you have a peaceful and thoughtful Memorial Day. And thanks for listening to the broadcast this hour. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you on Tuesday.